Okay, well, you know what I'm going to say now, so let's just go ahead and do it. And that is turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. And I'll say this up front. By the way, that place would be Deuteronomy chapter 3, not quite to the end, verse 23. So Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 23. And what I was starting to say was this is a very important parsha, arguably one of the most important, one of the most feature-packed, how's that for a great way to put it, feature-packed parashot in the book. And by that I mean, yes, it has the repetition of the Ten Commandments, almost, but not quite identical to the first time around. This is, of course, a continuation of the speech Moshe gave. It also has what the Mashiach calls the most important commandment in Scripture in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Yeah, it's called Shema, or the Shema, Shema Israel. And it also has several other things that I would suggest are extremely important, including some tests that we're going to see. It's going to continue into the next week's Parsha as well. And for that reason, these are also things that are perhaps some of the most ignored. Both the Hor Church and the Hor Synagogue really, really like to ignore at least one specific verse. I'll point it out when we get to it in this parsha portion, and it's important to note and to make mention of. All right, so it begins like this in 3:23, and I besought Vayet Hanan al Yahuwah. So Moshe speaking, he besought Yahuwah at that time, saying, "O Yahuwah Eloheka, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand. For what God is there, either in the heavens, Hashemayim, or on the earth, that can do according to your works and according to your mighty acts?" So he says, this is Moshe again, asking, pleading, "Let me go over, I pray you, see the good land that's beyond the Jordan River, the goodly hill country and Lebanon. But Yahuwah was wroth with me," it says, "for your sakes. He did not shamar, he did not hearken unto me. And Yahuwah said to me instead," hey, that's enough, right? "You have plenty already." The English, Old English renders it as, "Let it suffice you. Don't tell me anything more. Speak to me no more about this matter." So I do kind of like the understanding that is the literal one here. "You have so much," is what it says. And if you think about it, it's right. You have so much. Okay, let that be enough for you. So get yourself up, go to the top of Mount Pisgah, and lift up your eyes to the west, to the north, the south, and the east, and behold with your eyes, because you're not going to go over this Jordan River, but instead charge Yahushua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he is going to be the one to go over before this people, and he shall cause them to inherit the land, which you will see. So, says Moshe, continuing the story, "we abode in the valley over against Bet Peor." And here we go, chapter 4, and it starts this way. "And now, O Israel, hearken, Shamar, hear and obey, unto the statutes," that word is hukat, or in the plural here, hukim, "unto the ordinances, ha mishpatim, that I teach you to do them." Now, this is interesting for a couple reasons. One, it's going to again tell us that this is instruction, and when we have some things specifically that relate to law, he uses these terms, statutes and ordinances. But it's also the first time we see this root word that means to teach, lamad, in here. "So that you might live and go and possess a land which Yahuwah your El, the Elohim of your fathers, is giving you." And do all of these things. So here we have it again. Teach, hear, obey, do. And verse 4:2 is one of the ones that I'm going to say is ignored. It is vital, and of course it's one of the first things that comes from the mouth of the Torah made flesh, Yeshua, in the Sermon on the Mount speech. He immediately begins by saying, "Hey, don't think that I've come here to do away with the Torah or the prophets or any other word, in fact the word that he wrote. Not one yod or tittle, not the tiniest part is going to pass from the Torah as long as heaven and earth still exist and until everything is complete, fulfilled," and that hadn't happened yet. Okay, and here's how he puts it here. This is the part that he's being consistent with because it is so important. "You shall not add unto the word which I command you, nor shall you take away, diminish from it, so that you may keep the commandments of Yahuwah your El, which I command you." Now notice, and this is one of the things that I will probably emphasize, well, I almost always emphasize repeatedly, We have the two, the whoring wives of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. We see them in Ezekiel chapter 23, Jeremiah chapter 3, Northern Kingdom, Southern Kingdom, Ahola, Aholibah, a.k.a. Samaria, and Jerusalem, Israel, and Judah. Lots of names. Sometimes they're referred to by the names of the kings, Ephraim in the north, Judah in the south. But ultimately, they have become the progenitors. What is the current iteration of these things? Well, it's the whore church, the Northern Kingdom, the Lost Tribes, and the Whore Synagogue. Why do I use that terminology? Well, because Scripture does, in those places I just mentioned. Furthermore, because they do violate precisely this right here. Do not add to or subtract from the Word. And literally, both of them have made their bones, pun intended, by doing exactly that. Remember how Yeshua called them hypocrites for exactly that, saying, you know, you add all these burdens. And the whore church, of course, adds all kinds of things, subtracts a whole lot of things, too. The whore synagogue is mostly famous for adding things, right? They got less than a dozen, you can count them on your hands, commandments for Sabbath. And they added, by the time of Yeshua, well over 1,500. So there's adding, too. Again, all prohibited. Okay, your eyes have seen, he continues, what Yahuwah did in Baal Peor. For all the men that followed the Baal, the Lord of Peor, that Yahuwah your El destroyed. He destroyed them right from the midst of you. But you that did cleave unto Yahuwah your El are alive, every one of you this day. Behold, he says, I have taught you, here's that root word again, statutes and ordinances. Again, hukim ve mishpatim, even as Yahuwah my El commanded me. And these things, therefore, you should do in the midst of the land that you are going in to possess. So observe that word there, keep, shamar, and it's in the plural, y'all shamar. Observe and do, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples. When they hear these statutes, they'll say, surely, this nation is a nation great and wise, and it's an understanding people. Now, what's fascinating about this, Rashi notes that the key, he thinks here, is in the eyes of the peoples. That's the words that was used, of the nations, the goyim. And the key is that to do Yah's will, literally, is wisdom. What are we talking about? Throughout all of this parsha so far, what we're seeing are things that are going to be important. You're going into the land. Don't add to or subtract from the word. Do it. Keep it. Obey it. And the nations will see. And this will be regarded as wisdom. And they will see that this is, in fact, a nation of great and wise and understanding people. And he goes on. He asks this, for what nation is there that has Elohim so nigh unto them as Yahuwah is, our El is, whensoever we call upon him. Now think about that. That's kind of an amazing statement. Whensoever we call upon him. Would that it were true today. Obviously we're in a time when we have been scattered, and as promised, he is hiding his face. But imagine having him literally amidst us. What great nation is there, he said, that has statutes and ordinances so righteous? By definition, the very definition of Torah obedience, righteousness, is these statutes and ordinances and commandments. As all of this instruction, this Torah, which I set before you this day. So, only just take heed to yourself and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes saw, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. But, instead, make them known unto your children, and indeed unto your children's children. The day that you stood before Yahuwah your El in Horeb, when Yahuwah said to me, assemble me, the people, and I'll make them hear my words, they may learn to fear me all the days that they live upon the earth, and they may teach their children. And you came near, and you stood under the mountain burned with fire, under the heart of heaven, and there was darkness, cloud, thick darkness, and Yahuwah spoke unto you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the voice, the coal of the words, but you didn't see a form, you only heard a voice. And he declared unto you his covenant, his brit, which he commanded you to perform, even the 10 words, the 10 Deborim. And he wrote them upon 2 tablets of stone. And Yahuwah commanded me at that time to teach you, again, same words, Mishpatim, and the ordinances, that you might do them, Hukim, statutes and ordinances, that you might do them in the land that you're going over to possess it. So, therefore, take good heed unto yourselves. Because remember, you didn't see any kind of form on the day that Yahuwah spoke to you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest you deal corruptly. And here we're going to get another commandment against idolatry in no uncertain terms. And make yourself a graven image, the form of any figure, the likeness of male or female, the likeness of any beast on the earth, the likeness of any winged fowl that flies in the heavens, the likeness of anything that creeps on the ground, or of any fish that's in the water under the earth. And lest you lift up your eyes unto heaven when you see the sun, the moon, the stars, even all the host of the heavens, and you be drawn away and worship them. And serve them, which Yahuwah has allotted unto all the peoples under the whole of heaven. But you has Yahuwah taken and brought forth out of the iron furnace, out of Egypt, to be unto him a people of inheritance, as in fact you are to this day, or are this day. Now Yahuwah was angered with me, continues Moshe, for your sakes. And he swore that I would not be able to go over the Jordan, that I should not go in unto that good land which Yahuwah is giving you for an inheritance. But instead I must die in this land. I'm not going to go over the Jordan, but you are to go over and possess that good land. So he says, take heed unto yourselves, lest you forget the brit, the covenant of Yahuwah, which he made with you, and do what he has forbidden you to do, to make a graven image, the likeness of anything which Yahuwah has forbidden you to make, or has just simply forbidden you. For Yahuwah is a devouring fire. He, in fact, is Elkanah, and that's translated as a jealous El, but it's also understood to be another one of the names that is used, Elkanah, for the Almighty. Okay, when you shall beget children, and your children's children, and you have been long in the land, and you deal corruptly, and you make exactly what you've been told not to, a graven image, the form of anything, and you do that which is evil in the sight of Yahuwah, your El, to provoke him. Here we go. Moshe is laying down the two witnesses. I call, he says, heaven and earth to witness against you this day. Now, notice, heaven and earth, these two witnesses are the same two that Yeshua called in Matthew chapter 5, his first public address, said, as long as they exist, and they do, not one yod or tittle will pass from the Torah. So if those two witnesses exist, understand what Moshe is saying and what Yeshua is saying are basically two witnesses affirming the Torah, affirming the instruction. These things are true, and they remain so. So, here's Moshe. I will call, and I do call, heaven and earth to witness against you, Hayom, this day, that you shall soon utterly perish from off this land that you're going over the Jordan to possess. You shall not prolong your days upon it, but you shall utterly be destroyed. He called those witnesses. We know what history and the scriptures tell us, and in fact, he was right. Yahuwah will, and here we are, Yahuwah will scatter you among the peoples. That word there is the goyim. And you shall be left few in number among the nations where Yahuwah will lead you away. And there, he says, you shall serve other Elohim, the work of men's hands, wood and stone, which neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. Now, Rashi has an interesting take on this. Because ultimately, if you think about it, his comment makes good sense. The punishment for serving other gods is to go be scattered and serve other gods. But as Rashi notes, look, you are actually going to serve those who worship the other gods too. So that it's not really redundant. It's another level of servitude. So you'll serve gods and you'll serve the ones that those who are ruling over you serve too. But he says from there, and here comes, by the way, one of the prophecies of the greater regathering. This is, I think, one of the most uplifting and important, maybe this is part of the reason why it's ignored too, of the prophecies in the book. And listen to this one. From there, where? The place where we still are. From there you will seek Yahuwah, and you shall find him. Huh, we heard that somewhere? Seek and you shall find. If you search after him with all your heart and with all your soul. Okay, what else does he say? In your distress, when all of these things have come upon you, in the end of days, right? I ask this question every time we read it. Are we there yet? In the end of days, you will shuv, you will return to Yahuwah, and you will hearken unto his voice. So how's that for a prophecy, and how's that for something we're certainly looking forward to, and I believe and hope and pray we are in fact seeing the beginnings of. For Yahuwah is a merciful El. He will not fail you, nor destroy you, nor forget the covenant of your fathers, which he swore unto them. For ask now, of the days past, which were before you, since the day that Elohim created man upon the earth, and from one end of the heavens to the other, whether there has been any such thing as this great thing is, or has even been heard anything like it. Did ever, he says, a people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire, as you've heard, and live? Or has Elohim essayed to go and take himself a nation from the midst of another nation by trials, by signs, by wonders, by war, by a mighty hand, by an outstretched arm, and by great terrors, according to all that Yehuyarel did for you in Egypt before your eyes? Now, you know what? As I was reading that, I just a little bit of a vision, if you will, a little bit of an understanding. No, it's not exactly the same. But he asked, has anybody else heard that voice and taken a nation from the midst of another nation? You know what I'm thinking. I hope everybody's thinking the same thing. We, in fact, not exactly the same, but at least a large part of this certainly rings true. Elohim, in the case of America, did essay to take a nation from the midst of another nation by trials, by signs, by wonders, by war, by a mighty hand, and by an outstretched arm. They pledged themselves, their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, relying on what? Divine providence, His protection, His guidance. And can a nation arise, said Ben Franklin later, unless by His hand? These are the things that Elohim did for us here, as a matter of fact. He did them also, and arguably He did them with more of the minimum necessary miracles, but to defeat the greatest army on planet Earth and the biggest empire is certainly a pretty big miracle too. He did all of these things, at least then, and arguably, we're seeing echoes today, or, well, 250 years ago. Unto you it was shown, that you might know that Yahuwah, He is El. There is none else besides Him. Out of heaven He made you to hear His voice, that He might instruct you. And upon earth He made you to see His great fire, and you did hear His words out of the midst of the fire. And because He loved your fathers and chose their seed after them, and brought you out with His presence, with His great power, out of Mitzrayim, to drive out the nations from before you, nations greater and mightier than you, and bring you in, and to give you their land for an inheritance, as it is this day. To know this day, to lay it to your heart, that Yahuwah, He is El. In the Hashemayim above, the heavens above, and upon the earth beneath, there is no one else. And that word here is Ein. Ain't no one else even remotely like Him. And you shall... Oh, here it is again. This must be important. And you shall keep His statutes, again, His hukim, and His commandments, which I command you this day, that it might go well with you and with your children after you, and you may prolong your days upon the land which Yahuwah your El is giving you. Now, the English here says forever, but the word here is ha yamim, all the days. Then it says, Moshe separated. Now, that was the end of the speech part. Now, we're going to get a bit of text here, chapter 4, verse 41. Then Moshe separated three cities beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise, towards the east, so that the manslayer would have a place to flee, the one that slayed his neighbor unawares. Didn't hate him before, and in fleeing to one of these cities, he might be able to live. So here they are, Betzer in the wilderness, in the tableland, for the Reubenites, Ramot in Gilead for the Gadites, and Golan in Bashan for the Manassites. This, it says, is HaTorah, which Moshe set before the B'nai Israel. These are the testimonies, the statutes, and the ordinances which Moshe spoke unto the B'nai Israel when they came forth out of Egypt, beyond Jordan, in the valley, over against Beth Peor, in the land of Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon, whom Moshe and the children of Israel smote when they came forth out of Egypt. Big, scary dudes, not really so much after they were smitten. They took his land in possession, oh yeah, and the land of Og, king of Bashan, the two kings of the Amorites beyond the Jordan towards the sunrise, towards the east, from Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of Arnon, even unto Mount Sion, a.k.a. Hermon, and all the Arabah beyond the Jordan to the east, even unto the sea of the Arabah, under the slopes of Pisgah. All right, chapter 5 is going to begin this way. And Moshe called unto all Israel, and he said unto them, this sounds familiar, but we're going to get at least one more repetition. This is the first time that we see it here. Shema Israel. What? Ha hukim ve'et ha mishpatim. The statutes and the ordinances. which I speak in your ears today, this day, that you might learn them and observe to do them. Yehuah Arel, he cut, literally, he karat a brit with us in Horeb. And he didn't make this covenant just with our fathers, but with us, even us, who are all of us here alive this day. And arguably, folks, that terminology, Hayom, this day, all of us who are alive this day, think about it, it still applies to all of us who are still alive, Hayom, this day. Yahuwah spoke with you face to face in the mount out of the midst of the fire. So no, we didn't have that experience, but we do have the written record of it. I, says Moshe, stood between Yahuwah and you at that time to declare unto you the word of Yahuwah, because you were afraid because of that fire. You wouldn't, and went not up into the mount, saying, here's what he said. And by the way, if you recall, this is going to be the second repetition of the 10 words. First of those 10 sayings, 10 Devarim. Anoki Yahuwah. And as you know, I have a good friend. Unfortunately, it's the late Rabbi Spivak, who used to say, hey, you know, in lots of Jewish understanding, I think this is a brilliant way to put it. You can put a period after that, and it gives you the gist of the whole commandment. Anoki Yahuwah. I am Yahuwah Yirel. What does that mean? Just know it. It is. It's fact. It's beyond fact. It is the essence of the universe. Anoki Yahuwah. Who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage? And this then follows intimately because of the truth. You shall have no other Elohim before me. There indeed are none. You shall make not unto yourself a graven image, any kind of likeness of anything that's in the heavens above, the earth below, or the waters beneath the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, Yahuwah, your El, am literally Elkanah. Here it is again, a jealous El, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and upon the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. But there's more. Showing mercy unto the thousandth generation of them that love me. And wait a second. Is it enough to love him? Showing mercy unto the thousandth generation of them that love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of Yahuwah your El in vain, for Yahuwah will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Isn't it interesting? And this always kind of, I'll admit, it rubs me a bit the wrong way, because the name has been hidden. I ask, does that amount to taking his name in vain? Well, you can't very well say, I'm going to say it, folks, GD, goddammit, that is not taking his name in vain. That's not even his name, it's a title. It's an English title, doesn't even reflect his real name at all. Do not take the name of Yahuwah your El in vain. Now notice, in this very English rendering, they did exactly that. They took his name clear out of there. Doesn't that kind of reduce it to nothingness? People read this, they don't even know what name it's talking about. They think GD is somehow related to it. It's not. You shall not take the name of Yahuwah your El in vain, for Yahuwah will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain, who literally reduces it to nothingness, takes it out and puts capital L-O-R-D in there instead. Is that what he's saying? I can't help but think it's a lot more closer to the truth than simply saying GD something. All right. Observe, hear, shamar is the word in Hebrew. Observe, do, keep, guard the Sabbath day to keep it set apart, kadosh, as Yahuwah your El has commanded you. Ponder for yourself why it is that the whole church, still in exile, is still in exile because they still do not observe to keep the day that he said is my Sabbath forever, always, throughout your generations, even in exile, wherever you are, because it predates the giving of the Ten Commandments, and it predates, in fact, the entire Torah long, long before his Sabbath. Every culture on earth has a seven-day week. I wonder how that could be. All right. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath unto Yahuwah your El. In it you shall do no manner of work, not you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your ox, nor your ass, nor any of your cattle, nor even any stranger that is within your gates. That is within your gates. Outside your gates, you can't force them. But if they're inside your gates, you can ask them to honor the Sabbath, and should. This, he says, so that your manservant and your maidservant may rest, as well as you. And here is one of the differences that we're going to see with the first rendering of these 10 Devarim in Exodus chapter 20. You shall remember, he says, that you were a servant in the land of Egypt, and Yehuah brought you out of there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, Yehuah commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. All right. Honor your father and your mother, as Yehuah commanded you, that your days may be long, and that it may go well with you upon the land which Yehuah gives you. Then we get to the set of three two-word commandments, all of them prohibitions. First one, lo tirtzach. You shall not murder, shall not slay. There's another way to put it. Remember, not kill is not a good rendering, because there might be times when you do, in fact, have to kill in order to prevent another's being killed. This says, do not murder, do not slay, and there's a difference. Do not commit adultery. Lo tinath. I've said this before, I think it bears repeating. To commit adultery requires a married woman. Period. That's the definition of the words. And if that doesn't make sense, you can send questions. We've talked about it, but it certainly is consistent. And here's one of the problems. We have so many people that not only ignore his commandments, just like they ignore his name, they don't even understand the meaning of the words. Finally, lo tignov. Thou shalt not steal. Now, this word, too, is interesting. We already have a command, or we're going to have a command here, the very next one that says, don't covet your neighbor's stuff. Don't covet his wife, nor shall you covet his house, or his field, or his manservant, or his maidservant, or his ox, or his ass, or anything that is your neighbor's. We've got a commandment that says not to commit adultery. We have a commandment that says don't even covet these things. If you don't covet them, well, that kind of basically says you can't steal them. This is one of the things Yeshua teaches in Matthew 5. I'm going to suggest that the Hebrew understanding of this adds a little bit to our recollection. This word tignov actually is talking about stealing other things as well. We're going to be forbidden from stealing stuff. We have a commandment against adultery and not even coveting the neighbor's wife, so that makes it clear. Somehow coveting, lusting for, can lead to the act, and we see that here. So maybe there's more to lo tignav, and of course the sages suggest it means don't steal people either. Don't take, what we see the FBI, ATF, three-letter agencies galore, all, and of course they're Ministry of Truth propaganda saying, we just love stealing people, sex slavery, any kind of slavery that we can put people into bondage. Yeah, there is a big prohibition here. No wonder they don't like to talk about it. It's more than just stealing stuff. It includes stealing people. All right, so we've talked about the next one. Do not covet your neighbor's stuff, any of his stuff, his wife, his manservant, his ox, his field, his ass, anything that's your neighbor's. These words, it says, are the words that Yahuwah spoke unto all your assembly in the mount, out of the midst of the fire. So this is Moshe's summary. Out of the cloud, out of the thick darkness, with a great voice, and it went on no more. And he wrote those things upon those two tablets of stone. He gave them unto me. And it came to pass, when you heard the voice out of the midst of the darkness, while the mountain still burned with fire, you came near to me, all the heads of your tribes, your elders, and you said, whoa, behold! This Yahuwah RL has shown us his glory and his greatness, and we've heard his voice out of the midst of the fire. We have seen this day that Elohim does speak with man, and in fact he lives. So now therefore they ask, well, why should we die? Because this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of Yahuwah RL anymore, surely we'll die. So it scared the you-know-what out of them. I sometimes have suggested that maybe one of the things that was going on here, folks, because they saw the words. They literally saw them. And the words imply, at least to an engineer, a kind of a nerdy implication, admittedly, that they got a high bandwidth download. In other words, they basically got a straight connection to the mind of El, and they saw a whole bunch of stuff, and it just almost burned up the channel. Ooh, this is more than we can handle. This might kill us. So why should we see or hear or be enveloped by this thing anymore? It's more than a bit scary, because we would die. So who is there out of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living Elohim speaking out of the midst of the fire like we have and lived? Go thou near, and hear all that Yahuwah Ariel may say, and shall speak unto us all that Yahuwah Ariel, and you. So basically what they're saying is, Moshe, we'd like you to do this, okay? You go do this stuff. You speak unto us all that Yahuwah Ariel may speak unto you. And then we'll have a little bit of buffering. Then we'll hear it and we'll do it. So Yahuwah heard the voice of your words when you spoke unto me. And he said to me, all right, I've heard the voice of the words of this people. Notice how that's phrased. I have heard the voice of the words of this people. That's an interesting turn of phrase, isn't it? I've heard the voice of the words. Sounds like he has heard the intent and the understanding, something that goes beyond even what they actually said. And I guess that makes sense. That it might be well with them and with their children forever. So, say to them, return to your tents. But as for you, you stand here by me, and I'll speak unto you all the commandments and the statutes and the ordinances, those terms of law, if you will, which you shall teach unto them, that they might do them in the land which I give them to possess. So you shall observe to do, therefore, as Yahuwah your El has commanded you. You shall not turn aside, not to the right hand, nor to the left. You shall walk in all the way which Yahuwah your El has commanded you, that you might live, that it might be well with you, that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. Now, this, it says, is the commandment. Now notice, this is ha mitzvah. It's singular. This is the commandment, the statutes and the ordinances which Yahuwah Israel commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land that you're going over to possess. This is the commandment. And that's essentially, if you think about it, exactly what Yeshua is going to say about this being the most important, the commandment. That you might fear Yahuwah Israel to keep all of his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you, your son, your son's son, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. So hear, therefore, Shema, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it might be well with you, that you might increase mightily, as Yahuwah, the El of our fathers and your fathers, has promised unto you, a land flowing with milk and honey. And here we go. This is Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. Again, the Shema, as it's known, the most important commandment in Scripture. Shema Israel, Yahuwah Eloheinu, Yahuwah Echad. Vehavta et Yahuwah Eloheka, vekol levavka, vekol nefeshka, vekol meodeka. And in English, right? Shemar, hear. It's more than that, it's hearken. It's hear and obey, O Israel. Yahuwah, our El, Yahuwah is Echad. Now you notice I use the Hebrew word there, because Echad can be rendered, and is in this case, as one. Okay, he's one. Great. But you know what? Echad in this context is more than that. He is a unity. As a matter of fact, he is all, even. A flock of sheep is all of the sheep, and it is a unity. It's one, but it's more than just one, right? He is Echad. And you shall love Yahuwah your Elohim with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. And you shall teach them diligently unto your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. And you shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets before your eyes. And you shall write them on the doorpost. That word in the Hebrew there is matzutzot. And notice the little things that people put on the doorpost and have these very words put inside them in that little box. That's the doorpost, and that's the word matzutzah. So that's what sometimes they're called. And upon your gates. And it shall be when Yahuwah your El brings you into the land which he swore unto your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give you, great and goodly cities which you didn't build, houses full of good things which you didn't fill, cisterns hewn out which you didn't have to hew, vineyards and olive trees which you didn't plant, you shall eat and be satisfied. And then he says, beware lest you forget Yahuwah, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall fear Yahuwah your El, and him you shall serve, and by his name you shall swear. You're not to go out after other gods or the gods of the people that are round about you, because he is, here it is, the third time in this portion we see this name. He is Elkanah. the jealous El, even Yahuwah your El, he's in the midst of you, lest the anger of Yahuwah be kindled against you, and he destroy you from off the face of the earth. Sounds like this is important. You shall not try, test, P.O., if you will, Yahuwah your El, as you tried him, test him, yeah, torque him off in Massah. You shall diligently keep the commandments, the mitzvot of Yahuwah your El, and his testimonies, and his statutes, which he has commanded you. How many times has he, one way or another, said exactly that in this portion? Shamar, Shema, keep, do, hear, obey, teach, over and over again. Statutes, judgment, commandments, all of which are his instruction, his Torah. Diligently keep them, which he's commanded you. And you shall do that which is right and good in the sight of Yahuwah. I think we have a pretty good clue what that means here now, don't we? We should. That it may be well with you, and that you go in and possess the good land which Yahuwah swore to your fathers, to thrust out all of your enemies from before you, as Yahuwah has spoken. Now, here we're going to get one of the questions that turns up in, at least the Haggadah and some related places. When your son comes and asks you in the time to come, saying, what does all this mean? What about these testimonies, the statutes, the ordinances which Yahuwah our El has commanded us? Well, then you say to your son, now this is a slightly different but essentially similar recap of the story. You say to your son, well, we were Pharaoh's bondmen back in Egypt, in Mitzrayim, when Yahuwah brought us out of Egypt by a mighty hand. And Yahuwah showed signs and wonders great and sore upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, and upon all his house before our eyes. As a matter of fact, the 10 judgments there, actually 3 times 3 plus 1, were literally dissing, if you will, judgments, taking each one of the fake gods of Israel, of Egypt up one by one and saying, you think this is a god? No, piffle. So he did this, so that he brought us out from there to give us the land which he swore to our fathers. And Yahuwah commanded us what? Here it is again. To do all of these statutes, to fear Yahuwah our El, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive, as it is this day. And it shall be righteousness. Now, this is an interesting word, right? That word here is zadikah. That word literally means righteous, but a zadik is one who, what, understands, studies, keeps, does Torah. There's a circularity, if you will, to this definition. The very essence of righteousness, the English word, is to keep his statutes, judgments, commandments, study, to show yourself approved, do the Torah. It is what it means to walk in obedience, to be righteous. If it says, here you go, if we observe to do all of this commandment before Yahuwah, our El, just as he has commanded us. You would think it would be so obvious, so circular, so simple, that nobody could possibly miss it. And, of course, that's part of the reason I think that so much of this parsha is ignored. Now, chapter 7, just the first 11 verses here, are the end of the parsha. When Yahuwah your El shall bring you into the land that you're going in to possess, and cast out all those nations before you, the Hittite, the Girgashite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, 7 nations, greater and mightier than you, than thou, when Yahuwah your El shall deliver them up before you, and you smite them, then you shall utterly destroy them. Now, listen to this and ponder the implications. This one, too, is one of those things that people say, oh, this is that Old Testament God, that mean old God. If we understand the context here, I think it's pretty clear, it should be, why there's so much wrong in the world today. Because they didn't do it then. And what he is saying, it still rings true. So, you will utterly smite them and utterly destroy them. You shall cut no brit, make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Don't want anything to do with these. And ultimately, there's a school of thought, and I find myself more and more aligning with it, that says these things, these people, are not necessarily human. They are tainted bloodlines, right? Noah was perfect in his generation. Are they? In fact, Scripture tells us there were giants in the earth in those days, the descendants of the Nephilim, the Raphaim, and so forth, and also thereafter. Is that what we're talking about here? Certainly there are indications that it is. Don't make marriages with them. Your daughter shall not give unto, you shall not give your daughter unto his son, nor his daughter shall you take unto your son. Don't interbreed with these tainted DNA things that aren't really even human, is at least a decent understanding here. Can I prove that from Scripture? Well, not absolutely, but I think you can make a pretty good case, what a case that I would find convincing. And what does he say? Well, here's the reason, and it makes sense and it's consistent, because he, this thing that you do, will turn away your son from following me, that they might serve other gods. Isn't that exactly what we're seeing today? It describes, folks, Washington, District of Criminals and Swamp. It describes the nations of this world. It describes the prince of this world. It describes all kinds of things that are going on. He will turn away your son from following me, that they might serve other gods. And so, he says, will the anger of Yahuwah be kindled against you, and he will destroy you quickly. Well, it's already happened once. We were brought out of a different kind of bondage, as we've already talked about, from a different nation. Is it happening again? Now, at this point, we're going to get another indication of the anger and of the consistency here, where he says, you know, no graven images, no idolatry, don't add to or subtract from the word. This seems to be a good part of the reason why. Here, he says, is how you're going to deal with these folks. You shall break down their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, hew down their asherim, and burn their graven images with fire. Now, I notice, and this is true, almost every case where we see phrases very, very much like this in Scripture, especially in the Torah, where these words are in an interesting conjugation in the Hebrew. It's called the peel conjugation. And it basically is real emphatic. So if you drop something and break it, you know, that's the same root word. But in the peel conjugation, the same root word, just slightly different vowel pointers, becomes smash it to smithereens, right? You can set something afire or you can burn it to ashes. So in the Hebrew, this slightly more emphatic conjugation, I think, really kind of helps us put the level of vehemence that we're dealing with here in perspective. Let me read this again. You shall deal with them this way. You shall break down their altars, smash, dash in pieces their pillars, and hew down their asherim. You get the picture? And burn their graven images with fire. Because you are a set apart, a kadosh people, holy unto Yahuwah your El. Yahuwah your El has chosen you to be his own treasure out of all the peoples that are upon the face of the earth. And furthermore, he says, now we've heard this before, but this is a nice summary. He didn't set his love upon you. This root here is his desire in this case. Nor choose you, because there were so many of you, because you were more number than any of the other people. Indeed, you were the fewest among the people. Small, little, lowly. But he did it because Yahuwah, he loved you. That root word there, ahava, because he would keep the oath, his oath, which he swore unto your fathers. Has Yahuwah brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondage from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt? You bet. So therefore know that Yahuwah your El, he is the one singular El, period. The faithful El who keeps covenant, the covenant, really. It's Ha Brit in the Hebrew here. And he keeps mercy with them that love him. And notice, again, the conjunction. Mercy to them that love him and keep his commandments. In other words, seems to imply, I would say pretty blankety-blank and clearly, it's not enough just to say I love him. I love him and keep his commandments. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do the things I say? I think that kind of puts it in perspective, too. He keeps covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. On the other hand, it says he repays them that hate him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack to him that hates him. He will repay him to his face. So here we have it, folks. The final statement, the final verse, and the final commandment. It's not like we haven't heard it before in the Parsha. Therefore, he says, you shall keep the commandment, ha-mitzvah, the commandment, singular in this case, and the hukim, ha-hukim, plural, the statutes, and the ordinances, ha-mishpatim, which I command you this day. What, to pretend? No, to do them. It's consistent, it's simple, and as we're going to see in the rest of this book, it's not too hard either, but it's vitally, literally life and death important.